بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. We are going to continue our discussion about lesson 18. About lesson 17, and then we will continue with lesson 18. In lesson 17, we discussed the issue of priority of sensation or intellect in respect to ideas, to at-tasavvurat. And inshallah, when we finish the remainder of this lesson, we will discuss the same issue, that is priority of sensation or intellect, in respect to affirmations, to at-tasdiqat. So this is the general structure of our discussions in today and inshallah in the next session. If you remember, we said that there are different views among Western philosophers concerning the issue of priority of sensation or intellect in respect to ideas, and we evaluated some of them. Now at the end, the author wants to express the view of Muslim philosophers. Of course, because this issue was not discussed by Muslim philosophers necessarily in a separate and independent way, so sometimes you may not find it in other philosophical works as clearly mentioned as here, but this is generally accepted by Muslim philosophers. So it's quite clearly established in Islamic philosophy. The author says, suppose that you look at a beautiful garden and you see that there are flowers and there are different sorts of plants. What first of all encounters us are those external objects that we come to know through our senses, certainly by looking at them, maybe by smelling also their smells, maybe sometimes by touching them. And the senses that work here produce some ideas in our mind, which are sensual ideas or sensational ideas. Different people use different expressions here. And these are individual or particular. For example, there is a flower in front of me. I have an understanding of that flower. That understanding depends on existence of an image of that flower in my mind, because I cannot directly know something external. It must be through images. This is what we discussed in our previous discussion about al-ilmul husuli, the acquired knowledge or conceptual knowledge. Okay, so we have a sensual or sensational image, which is a particular or individual idea. This cannot be predicated of many, many things. No, it is a particular image of this or that flower, just one. When I close my eyes and the process of seeing or smelling stops, I may still have the image of that flower or that plant in my mind in a particular way, still a very special and a specific image which does not again apply to more than one thing. This is also individual, this is also particular. This is something related to my sensation, but not a present sensation, but a sensation which was there, and now I have a picture of that in my memory. But it is also possible that out of these different individual images, or if you call it pictures of flowers, I draw a universal picture, and that is flower, which can be applied to this flower, that flower, or flowers in other gardens or in other places. This universal concept, which is a sort of concept which we called it before al-mafahim al-mahawiyya, concepts related to quiddities or to natures, these are the first sort of universal concepts that we come to know in our conceptual knowledge in al-ilm al-husuli. So in al-ilm al-husuli, usually we have first sensation, then the remaining ideas after the process of sensation stops, still are particular or individual, and then we draw a universal concept out of them by the process of generalization, by the process of deleting specificities of those particulars and keeping and preserving what is common. So specificities are left aside and commonalities are kept. This is how you can have a universal concept of flower. So here, as you see, the role of sensation is very important and very significant. So you have first sensation, and then you draw a universal idea out of it. This is why there is a famous statement among Muslim philosophers, and that is "Man faqada hissan faqada ilman." They say whoever lacks one of five senses, he lacks a sort of knowledge, one type of knowledge. If a person is blind, he is not able to see, and he was from the very beginning blind, so that he could not have anything in his memory. So this person can have no knowledge of, for example, redness or yellowness, because if you cannot feel, if you cannot see particular red or green or yellow objects, then you cannot have a universal concept of redness or yellowness. So this is why they say whoever lacks one of the senses, he lacks some sort of knowledge. Or a person, for example, who has no ability to smell. There are some people who have some problems in, for example, their noses or maybe in their brain. They cannot feel the smells. And these people can have no idea about, for example, perfumes, about a smell of rose flower. So the way to imagine the universal concepts is closed to them because they cannot imagine or sense the particular smells, the individual smells. Okay, so you see there is a significant role here for sensation. But it doesn't mean that the universal concept that we have here is exactly the sensational image that we had. No, it's different. That was individual and this is universal. It's not exactly the same, and it's neither the alteration of that. It's not something like, for example, combining some sensational ideas and then coming to a universal one. No, this is something else. This is something new, which is based on sensational ideas. So sensational idea is something, universal concept is something else, but this was based and dependent on the existence of sensational ideas in the first place. In other words, the universal concept that we have here, like for example flower, the universal concept of flower, this is different in nature from the sensational ideas, but it presupposes the existence of sensational ideas in the first place. Okay. The other sort of ideas that we have is the one which is related to knowledge by presence. Sometimes, instead of, for example, looking at a garden and having those sensational ideas, we look at our own soul or look inside ourselves and we find some special feelings which are not like seeing or smelling or touching or hearing. No, this is internal feeling. For example, I feel very happy, I feel very hopeful, or I may feel sad, I may feel hopeless. These feelings are understandable by our own knowledge of what we call it, knowledge by presence. We do not need to use any of those five senses. We do not need to act as an external observer. We do not need to use some images to be between us and those objects. No, those objects, happiness, sadness, hope, fear, and so on and so forth, are present to me by themselves. Okay? So these are also individual ideas. The fear or the hope or the happiness or sadness that I have, I feel, this is particular. This is individual. This cannot be applied to many things. My happiness at this moment is different from your happiness. And it's even different from my happiness in future or in the past. This is a particular being which exists inside me. And this is something that I understand, I know in a very immediate and direct way. Okay? So, you see that it's not necessary to have all the individual ideas through sensation. Okay. Now, is it possible to draw out of these individual internal objects, to draw out of them some universal concepts? Yes, of course. I can draw out of these individual feelings of happiness a universal concept, a common concept of happiness. So happiness is a universal concept. It applies to my happiness at the moment, my future happiness, my past happiness, your happiness. So you see that here we can have a universal concept, a universal idea, without any need to use sensational ideas. So this is to show that the intellect, human reason, al-aql, is able to come to some universal concepts without first starting with sensational ideas. Okay? This is very important to be able to make a balance between the role of sensation and the intellect. There are also some other sorts of ideas that do not depend on sensation. And indeed, there is no way to understand them by sensation, because they are not existent in the external world. They only exist inside our mind. These are the concepts that you are already familiar with. These are what we call secondary logical intelligibles. Al-ma'gulat, al-thaniya, al-mantaqiyya. Like, for example, the concept of universality. The concept of universality itself is something that only exists in our mind. You don't have universality outside, because this is a quality of concepts, and concepts only exist in our minds. So you cannot have universality as something separate outside. No, universality is a quality of the mind's objects. Objects belonging to our minds. Or even the concept of particularity or individuality. This is also a mental object, because it's a quality of concepts. Some concepts are individual, some are universal. But in either cases, they are mental qualities. Because concepts are mental objects, so their qualities are also mental. So this is another case in which our intellect, our reason, works without dependence on sensation. There is no way for sensation here, because it's not related to the external objects. And finally, we reach secondary philosophical intelligibles. Secondary philosophical intelligibles are very sophisticated and very complicated concepts. And as you remember, we said in the past that these are some concepts which were very well distinguished by Muslim philosophers, and they were able to discern these concepts from other sorts of concepts, and they were able to solve many philosophical problems by appeal to these concepts. And this is one of the contributions of Muslim philosophers to philosophy in general. Whenever you have a secondary philosophical intelligible, that may be possible to be applied to the things outside, and it may be applied to the things inside. For example, causality. Causality is one of the well-known secondary philosophical intelligibles. This is a concept that can be applied to the external objects. For example, the external fire burns some piece of wood. So there is a causality outside between fire and burning. This is not something which is in our mind, unlike what Kant was suggesting, or unlike what Hume was saying, that there is no causality, it's just association of ideas. No, we believe that in the real world there is causality, and fire really is active. Fire really has a role in burning that piece of wood. I'm not saying that it has the exclusive role, but it has some role. It's important in burning. Okay, that causality which exists there is a case, is an instance of the universal concept of causality that I have in my mind. So you see that secondary philosophical intelligibles can be applied to particular ideas, particular objects, I mean, in the external world. This is unlike secondary logical intelligibles, which can only be applied to mental objects. But what is important to know is that secondary philosophical intelligibles also can be applied to objects inside us. And indeed, this is a very crucial aspect of secondary philosophical intelligibles. This is the way to secure them from doubt. And this is the way to release them from dependence upon sensation. Inshallah, we will have a more detailed discussion about this in other parts of the book. When we talk about ontology, we will have this discussion. But very briefly here, we can say that the first time that we come to know, that we come to discern and distinguish the concept of causality, may be inside ourselves. When I see the relation between my soul and the acts of my soul, I see that I decide to do something. So my decision is an effect of my soul. My soul is a cause for my decision. So there is a causality here. We do not need just to look at external causalities, just have fire and wood. No, there is a real, and I am saying real in a very full sense, there is a real causality inside us. And indeed, one of the best ways to have some idea about the way that we depend on God Almighty, we depend on our Creator, is to reflect upon ourselves and to see how our acts depend on ourselves. I'm not saying that we are creator of our acts in the sense that God the Almighty is our creator. But there is a sense of creation here, of course, with the blessing of God and with the support that we receive from God and with the permission that we have from God. But the best and the nearest case of causality which can help us to understand the real causality that exists between God the Creator and His creatures is to reflect upon the relation between ourselves and our acts. And this is one aspect of famous prophetic hadith in which the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Man arafa nafsahu faqad arafa rabbahu." Whoever knows himself, he has known his Lord. This is only one aspect of this hadith, of course, there are many other aspects. And I have discussed this issue in my book, Self-Knowledge, And of course, this is what I have learned from Islamic sources and works of great scholars, but just something handy in English. Anyway, when I reflect, I ponder upon my acts, upon my internal feelings, upon everything that I can understand by presence, I realize that there is, for example, the concept of causality, the concept of causedness, al-ma'luliyya. There is a concept of, for example, existence here. There is a concept of contingency, concept of necessity, all different sorts of secondary philosophical intelligibles exist here. So I do not need to borrow anything from the external world. I do not need to depend on sensation. No, this is another way. This is another gate. This is another realm. So here you see that again, we have been able to identify an area in which the crucial role is what belongs to the intellect, to al-aql. So, the conclusion here can be as follows. We believe that sensation is important. We do not deny the role of sensation in some aspects of our understanding of ideas, at-tasavvurat. But it does not mean that all our ideas depend on sensation. First of all, we said that there are some areas in which we do not need sensations to be able to have some ideas. And secondly, we said that even when we need to have sensation first, then to have universal concept like the concept of flower and redness and so on and so forth, it doesn't mean that this universal concept is the same as that sensational object or the same as sensational idea. Sensational idea is individual, is particular, and this universal concept is something else. It depends on that, but it is different from that. It is taken out of it, but it's not a combination of that with other sensational ideas. There is an important and crucial role of intellect, again, to generalize and abstract these universal concepts out of those sensational ideas which are particular or individual. Okay, this is enough regarding the issue of priority of sensational intellect in respect to at-tasavvurat. Now we want to start lesson 18. And this is related to at-tasdiqat, to affirmations. Before we go into the core discussion, we have to know certain things, certain terminologies, and certain divisions that logicians or philosophers have made here. So there are several, up to 8 points that we have to mention, and inshallah, after mentioning these points, we will go into the core problem. First of all, we should know that at-tasavvur, that is idea, is something free or empty from judgment. Whenever you have an idea, whenever you have a tasavvur, that does not say whether or not that thing exists or has certain quality. For example, an idea of flower. an idea of red, an idea of particular person, a specific object. These ideas involve no judgments. If I have an idea of, for example, my friend Ali, this does not mean that he exists or he does not exist. Because even if he does not exist anymore, I still have that idea in my mind. And this is why we can have question. We may imagine something and then we may have question whether that exists or not. So we should be very careful that whenever we have only ideas, only tasavvurat, there is no judgment involved. As soon as judgment comes, we have at-tasdiq, we have affirmation. So this is to distinguish between at-tasavvur and at-tasdiq. I'm sure that you are already familiar with this point, but this was important to begin with. A very important point here is regarding the knowledge by presence. In knowledge by presence, there is a real simplicity. Suppose that now you feel happy. I hope you feel happy. When you feel happy, this happiness is very, very simple. It's not a proposition. It's not a knowledge by presence in which you have a proposition and then you have, for example, it's not a knowledge by concept, acquired knowledge. I may have uttered the word. In knowledge by presence, you don't have subject and predicate. No. You have a simple feeling of happiness. When you want to put it into words, when you want to make it as an assertion, when you want to make it a conceptual knowledge, then you say, I feel happy. This is when you have different concepts. This is where you have subject and predicate. But when you are feeling happiness, when you have knowledge by presence, that is simple. That is neither tasavvur nor tasdiq, because tasavvur and tasdiq are divisions of acquired knowledge, al-ilm al-husuli. So in al-ilm al-huzuri, in knowledge by presence, there is a real sense of simplicity. Okay? When we want to reassess or reassert, maybe assertion, maybe assessment of our knowledge by presence, we may put it into a sentence. We may say, I feel happy, or I do not feel happy. This becomes compound, this becomes a mixture of certain concepts, certain ideas, and a judgment, and therefore this is a case in which we have an affirmation, a tasdiq. But this is different from the knowledge by presence. Here we may make mistakes sometimes in translating our knowledge by presence into words. Sometimes we may make mistakes. Sometimes you may have a feeling, and that feeling is beyond doubt and suspicions, because you feel that directly, immediately. But when you want to put it into words, you need to interpret it, and then you may make mistake. But this does not mean knowledge by presence is mistaken. No. The acquired knowledge, which is derived by us from that knowledge by presence, may be mistaken because of the wrong interpretation which was involved. In any case, we should know that ideas by themselves involve no judgment, and in knowledge by presence also there is a real sense of simplicity, there is no combination, and the moment in which we start to make it as an affirmation involving subject and predicate, exactly in that moment we have left the knowledge by presence and we have come to the conceptual world. The other thing which is mentioned at the end of first point is that sometimes an idea may look simple, but it may involve in itself an affirmation. For example, if I say man seeks truth in general, or if I say about a particular person, for example, if I say Mahmoud seeks truth or is seeking truth. If I say seek truth means in general, is seeking truth means at the moment. So you have a subject and that is Mahmoud, and a predicate that is seeks truth or is seeking truth. Mahmoud looks as a simple idea. But indeed, when I say Mahmoud is seeking truth or seeks truth, it means that Mahmoud is there and Mahmoud is seeking truth. Because if he is not there, if he does not exist, how can he seek the truth? Okay? So sometimes the idea itself may involve a preposition, an affirmation. This is what is called by logicians aqdul wad'a. And they mean that sometimes subject al-mawdu' involves in itself an affirmation. Okay. But this does not refute the idea that we mentioned at the beginning, that ideas do not involve judgments. Here, the idea, like Mahmoud, he itself does not have any judgment, but it implies, it is connected to an affirmation. It is by way of implication, making us understand that he exists, he is there, and then the predicate comes. Okay? So it is something attached to that idea, not something part of the nature of idea. Ideas in nature are free from any judgment. Okay. The second point is that ideas are sometimes universal and sometimes particular. This is also something very clear. I say, for example, man is mortal, so man is universal. Sometimes I say Mahmoud is mortal, so Mahmoud is individual. And those universal ideas are divided into the primary intelligibles, al-maghulatul ula, which are related to quiddities, al-mafahimul mahuviyya, and secondary intelligibles, which are themselves divided into logical and philosophical. These are something that you know. The third point is that in logic, in classic logic, propositions are divided into al-hamliyya and al-shartiyya. Please look at the screen. Al-hamliyya and al-shartiyya. Okay, so you have al-qadiyya, which is divided into al-qadiyya means proposition. Okay, proposition. This is divided into two, al-hamliyya and al-shartiyya. Al-hamliyya means like this, A is B. Okay, Like, for example, I say, this flower is red. This is al-hamliya. So you have subject and predicate. Ash-shartiya means conditional. So it's not predication, in which you have subject and predicate. No, it's conditional. And this in itself is divided into two. Al-ittisaliyya al-shartiyya. Al-ittisaliyya al-shartiyya al-infisaliyya. Al-ittisaliyya is written in this way. Al-infisaliyya is written in this way. Al-infisaliyya. Okay? We mean by al-ittisaliyya the very popular form of ash-shartiyya. And that is if P then Q. If P, then Q. For example, if there is sun, then there is heat. If you come, I respect you, for example. If P, Q. Al-infisaliyya means there is a sort of disconnectedness, a sort of exclusiveness. I say P or Q. For example, I say every number is either even or odd. Or, for example, I say every person is either a believer or disbeliever. Which means if he's believer, he's not disbeliever. If he's disbeliever, he's not believer. And it has different ways. Sometimes they cannot be together, but you may have none of them. And this is what we call mana'atul jam'. Means these two cannot be together, but you may have a case in which none of them exist. Mana'atul jam'. So the problem is only to be together. Sometimes they are mana'atul khuluv. Means they cannot be totally absent. At least one of them must be there. But they can both be there. There is no problem in being together. The problem is that one of them must exist. This is mana'atul khuluf. And sometimes they cannot be together and one of them at least must exist. So from both ways there is a relation here. These are the things that are very simple and clear, and in logic you may have studied this, or you can easily find this. So when I say every number, every figure is either even or odd, so you can have no number which is both even and odd. And you can have no number which is neither even nor odd. At least one of them must be there. But if I say every, for example, Iranian is either a Muslim or a Christian. It means that he cannot be both Muslim and Christian, but he may be, for example, a Zoroastrian, who is not a Muslim nor a Christian. Because there are some also Zoroastrian, very few, but there are. So the problem here is that these Muslim and Christian cannot be applied to one person. A person is either a Muslim or a Christian. But there may be a person who is neither a Muslim nor Christian. Okay? So this is different from being even or odd. Anyway, the last point that I would like to mention here today is that the relation between subject and predicate is sometimes necessity, sometimes possibility. And necessity may be positive, may be negative. And by negative, we mean impossibility. So sometimes the subject is necessarily the predicate. For example, God is living. God is knowing. This is necessarily. God is necessarily living, necessarily knowing. Man is mortal. This is necessity. But if I say, for example, man is immortal, this is impossible. And if I say man is a chemist, man is a philosopher, this is possibility. Or if I say man exists, this is possibility. God exists, this is necessity. Man exists, this is possibility. This quality of relation, whether it's possible or necessary or impossible, this is called maddatul qadiyya, matter of proposition. Maddatul qadiyya. Maddat al qadiyya. Al qadiyya means proposition, and maddat means matter. So matter of proposition. And when this is expressed linguistically by usage of some terms, it's called jahatul qadiyya. Jahat al qadiyya, which means mode of proposition. And you know that the whole issue is discussed in logic under the title modality. Or modal logic. So you have mode of proposition. So it's saying that God is necessarily existent. So necessarily is mentioned here. So mode of proposition is something which indicates the matter of proposition. So this was the fourth point which was mentioned here, and inshallah we will continue this discussion in the following session. Wa akhiru da'wana an alhamdulillah rabbil alameen.